Music and Booze with Mo is produced and distributed by Eats Drinks TV, a service of the Center for Culinary Culture, home of the Cocktail Collection, and First Reel Entertainment, and is available wherever fine podcasts can be heard. The Center for Culinary Culture, telling the story of food and drink, one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. On this podcast, we are going to Philadelphia, and we are going to visit a legendary haunt, Tattooed Mom. Tattooed Mom is an over 20-year-old now, if I remember correctly, joint where musicians and artists and, well, just about anybody is welcomed. It's covered in graffiti on the first level, has an art gallery on the second level, has lots of fun cocktails, vegan food, and lollipops, if you like. And we're going to talk with James Horn, who's one of the bartenders there. He has been there for 13 years. If that isn't loyalty, I don't know what is. And he's going to tell us about his punk rock days, maybe some future music that will be coming from him eventually, and, you know, what it's like to buy a van from a random dude while you're on the road and then just abandon it later. Yeah, we've all done that, right? Mm-hmm. So sit down and relax. We're going to have some talk about punk rock and Tattooed Mom.
That part always cracks me up. Look at you, so professional with your headphones and your mic, and you've got a windscreen and everything.
This is also my office is also kind of my makeshift home studio. So
I was going to say, you're obviously used to doing some recording in that little space.
Yeah.
And you record your music in there?
I've been working on some solo kind of material and kind of just experimenting and learning about.
Nice.
Digital material, you know, digital recording.
We got locked away for a while, so it was a good time your bedroom music.
That's exactly what it was for me. It was, you know, I'd been in all these bands that were, you know, almost analog fetishists. I'd had a lot of experience with, you know, doing things to tape and that sort of thing, but I hadn't really experimented in the digital world much. So I was really like, oh, this is a great opportunity for me to really learn. So,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, before we go any further, I always like to have this opportunity where you can introduce yourself and let people know where you work and maybe to introduce your bands too. I mean, or the bands you're currently playing with. Anyhow, I know you've played with a lot.
yeah, I've been in a lot of bands. Well, anyway, my name is James.
Hi, everybody. James.
I'm James Horn, and I work for Tattooed Moms, which is a wonderful, wonderful institution, bar, space in Philadelphia that provides, you know, food and beverage to and a space for artists to showcase work and meet people. And it is, you know, just a wonderful place to be a part of. I have been in a bunch of Philly bands. I was in a band called the Tough Shits for a long time. I was also in a band called the Whips, and, you know, a bunch of other little side things and, you know, that sort of thing. I am not currently in a project, as a matter of fact. Yeah.
Hence the solo bedroom experimentation.
Yeah, exactly. So I had spent, you know, about 7 years in that band, and we kind of just decided it was time.
Yeah.
And we played our show. Our last show was like the last week of February, 2020.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
So, you went out just in time before
We were kind of the last show for a lot of people, I think.
God, that's kind of wild to think about, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, people are going back and seeing concerts and stuff now. So I guess the worst is over. So
to speak. But you still think of that. I mean, I know it just so happened when I had my last drink, you know, and at a bar, sitting at a bar top. And I remember sitting there with my husband and our friend, and they had the TV on, and they announced that the NBA this season was canceled. And we're like, oh, this is serious. And then like 2 days later, we were all shut down, you know? And then my first drink sitting at a bar again, just coincidentally happened to be the same bar. So, but I was very aware of that. I was just like, I remember, you know, we think about those things. What was the last show? You know, what was the last time you were out?
Absolutely.
So when did you start playing? When did you start playing music? Because you've been playing for a long time.
Oh, I've been playing. You're right. I have been playing a very long time. I started. I mean, really, if you wanted to get down to the brass tacks, I learned to play the trumpet when I was in fourth grade.
Oh, I love that.
You know, part of the elementary school music program. I got a trumpet and I learned how to read music. And I to this day I can understand how music is written. I can't sight read. And I've never really been good at sight reading. I always used to like learn how to play the song by kind of following along, and you know, I understood the music notation part of it, but I could never sight read. And so I would learn the parts and I'd memorize them and I'd play them from memory. And then I did that until I'd say about, I want to say sixth or seventh grade, I started to get interested in playing the guitar. And I got an electric guitar. And then I had a friend in eighth grade, I remember, who got a drum set. And I would come over with my guitar and he'd want to play my guitar and I'd want to play his drum set. And the funny thing is, eventually we actually switched and he bought a guitar and I bought his drum set from him. From then on, it was really all about playing drums for me.
Really?
I was kind of the guy who played the drums, and I had a drum set. And my very first band, you know, outside of just kind of fooling around with him, you know, there was like guys in high school. This one guy, he had gone to friend school, and my friend Nate, shout out to Nate if he gets to hear this. He was in friend school and he came for his first year, and he was like in our study hall. And I was like, hey man, what's going on? Why don't you come hang out with us? Blah, blah, blah. I seemed like a new guy, seemed cool, whatever. And he was like, yeah, I'm in this band, but like our drummer left. And I was like, I play the drums. He's like, well, okay. And they like gave me a demo tape, you know, very innocent story. And this was all pre-internet. I'm old enough to remember that.
So, same.
So he gave me a demo tape, and you know, and then after that it was on. I just went, him and Max and I started playing together, and that was like my first real band. And we would like put out little demo tapes and sell them at our little shows that we play at the local middle school. And
so were you playing your own music, or were you selling demo tapes that were covers of songs and stuff?
It was mostly originals.
Really? At that age, that's amazing.
Yeah, we were, you know, I got really affected by punk really early on. I mean, like, it was like, it started off for me as like Nirvana was the big gateway for me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that got me interested in independent music, the Melvins and Shonen Knife, and, you know, just
like, oh my God, Shonen Knife. No one ever talks about Shonen Knife.
I know. They were great.
They're so fun.
Yeah, super fun. Super fun. So yeah, it was really just like, I kind of was interested in the independent side of it because it just seemed like such a cool thing. Because, you know, this was the 90s, you know, yeah. Everybody had funky colored hair and you know, cool clothes and stuff, you know? And yeah, and then these guys were like turning me on to punk. Like they had, you know, these were the first guys showing me The Clash and, you know, Sham 69. Mm-hmm. We covered Borstal Breakout.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
you know, so you're covering stuff that most of the people watching your shows probably had no idea what it was.
Right. I mean, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, so we did some covers, but it was also like, you know, that's what you did. You wrote your own tunes and hopefully you made it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that was kind of the thing. And then we just, you know, as music progressed, you know, we got into like the post-hardcore stuff and kind of changed it up. And then we added members, and then I went to college. We all kind of split off and went to college. Yeah. And, you know, I've stayed in touch with a couple of those guys. But yeah, you know, and then just I bounced around bands in Philly for a while and then kind of landed with the guys who eventually became Tough Shits. and then that just became like everything. We all lived together.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So you went full on with that band.
Oh yeah. No, we were like, I mean, we had the Tough Shits house was legendary. It was like, it was the party house. Like, I'll tell you what, that party never ended while we were there. But yeah, it was great because living together, you get to play all the time. And it was mm-hmm. just like, you know, we'd play as a band with all the instruments until about 10, which was when, at least in Pennsylvania, you know, noise ordinances. So we'd play till 10 and then we'd, you know, just to like not piss the neighbors off too much. we'd move it to acoustic guitars. You know?
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
the stripped down version, unplugged.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you get a lot of songwriting because we've always felt, or at least I've always felt that, If a song's really good, all you need is a guitar and you can just play mm-hmm. it and sing it and it's a good song. Mm-hmm. So like we did a lot of work just kind of like that, just kind of strumming guitars and singing along and goofing on lyrics. And then an idea would come up and, you know, next thing, and then we'd bring it to, you know, once, you know, the next day we'd bring it to the whole band and kind of work it out. And that was just how we did a lot of our material to start.
That's amazing. That's, yeah. I mean, I can't, it feels like living with the band that just seems so ultimate. You know, you hear about bands doing that when they're recording, you know, when they're at the time they're brainstorming all this kind of stuff. And actually I have a friend who his band, I live in a part of LA just over the hill from us, is Highland Park, which is kind of one of the hipster parts of LA mm-hmm. now. And he lived there when it was still real sketchy.
Right.
But their house, their band house was also the party house. It's like, so I think someone still lives there. They've got like this robot on the porch. You can drive down the street. And I always saw it before I knew that that was where he'd used to live with his band. And I'm like, oh, the robot house. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They do the same thing. It was kind of legendary stories there too. A lot of debauchery.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming that happened to you as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you guys get to tour? Make light of it. Oh yeah. 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 We made this big deal where we all quit our jobs and we went out for 3 months, you know, live the rock star life. And the story of that tour was that our van completely died while we were in LA and we bought a new one. And we bought a new van while we were there. We just like bought it off some guy. We didn't even do the titles or anything. And then it was like real sketchy, but we just like, and the funniest part about that van was it literally had a hardwood floor installed in the back of the van. Yeah, it was so bizarre. It was so bizarre. We just like bought it off some guy off Craigslist. And he was just like, you know, like I said, like, no title swap, nothing. Yeah. I think we ended up just like, I think that van actually ended up just getting ditched in Philly and then eventually was towed.
Lived in Philly? Is that where you were?
I mean, I grew up in Bucks County and I moved to Philly in 2000.
Okay. So Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, when in your back in your hometown when you were younger, what was the music scene like there for you?
Oh, you know, it's funny. We actually had a really cool music scene. I was right in between two really good music scenes. There was the Lehigh Valley scene, which was very like pop punk oriented. Bands like Westin was big in that area. Nooner.
Wow.
I'm trying to think of some other. Yeah. The Overdrives, I remember. It was a band called Grieving Eucalyptus that I really loved. They were like
Grieving Eucalyptus?
Yeah, they were like this like kind of pop punk like 50s throwback thing.
Oh, wow.
I always thought was so cool. And
that's a crazy name.
Like, yeah, I was always like, why didn't that blow up? Like they should have been huge, but you know, that's just how these things go.
That's one thing about when you got a local music scene. When I lived in the Bay Area all through the 90s, and the music scene was so incredible. And I would just hear these bands and I'm like, why aren't you bigger? And yeah. You still hear stuff like that all the time. And being a musician can be like exciting and heartbreaking all at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Let me just say, I've had my moments of like regret, you know, calling the band the Tough Shits. We had a lot of opportunities that got squandered by having a name like that.
You know? Yeah.
You can't say it on the radio. You can like, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, God bless the internet. You can get away with a lot more, especially.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I know at one point NPR wanted to do a story about us, but they couldn't because getting around
the name.
Yeah. Yeah. Or at least I had heard that through the grapevine. Who knows mm-hmm. if it's actually mm-hmm. true, but
yeah.
But yeah, you know, it was tough. You know, it's one of those things where it's like, you know, should we have changed it and had better experiences, or, you know, were our experiences good because we were punk and wanted to
be yeah,
punk,
right. So when did bartending get into your world? When did you start bartending? I mean, you're
so that all kind of happened simultaneously. I'm going to apologize. I do have a dog who,
you know what?
Really indignant about other dogs walking down the street.
I'm all for everyone else's pets because I can't have one anywhere I live. And so
why I actually moved. I was in Center City during the pandemic and we were just like fantasizing about our yard and having a dog. And then we finally pulled the trigger on it in February. And now we're in this kind of northwest corner of Philadelphia out by mm-hmm. Fairmount Park, which is like a huge park out there. And mm-hmm. we have a backyard now and three floors. And we're like, we're getting a dog.
Oh my God. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, that's yeah, like, yeah. I have never in my life not lived with a cat until the last like 6 years. I was the day I was born. There was a litter of cats born at my parents' house. So I even had a brother. I had a cat brother. So I'm just sort of, and we had a dog too. So if your dog wants to come join the call, it's totally cool.
I gave him food and water, so he should be good, but you might hear him from time to time getting annoyed with someone walking their dog.
Bartending.
I was doing this all kind of simultaneously. I mean, I've worked in bars since I was 15. My very first job was at a brew pub in New Jersey.
So was that legal? I was going to say, was it a brew pub? So there was food there too. So I guess that's why it was legal for you to work there.
Yeah. I worked washing dishes.
Okay.
And then eventually moved up to runner, but mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. because they served the food, I was able to legally. I remember I had to get permission because I think you're not allowed to work until you're 16. You have to get a letter from school saying it's okay or something. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Your parents, I forget. It was definitely like a process, but yeah, I started working at a brew pub at 15. And I did that up until basically until I moved to college. And then in college, I kind of was like, you know, bounce around jobs, but also like I had, you know, some school money, mm-hmm. financial aid. So I wasn't quite as worried about the job thing, but then, you know, once I really needed the job. Mm-hmm. I finally landed on working at this place. So in Philly, there used to be this legendary bar called JC Dobbs. Everybody played there. Nirvana played there, Pearl Jam, all this stuff. And then eventually it kind of died off and got bought and became this place called the Pontiac Grill. And the Pontiac Grill served food downstairs, but they had a bar and stage upstairs and other bands would play there. And I think a lot of that, like when that whole emo thing was blowing up in mm-hmm, the mm-hmm. early 2000s, a lot of those bands would do their all ages show there.
Oh, okay.
Especially because, you know, a lot of those bands are from New Jersey. So we were kind of like a silly place to come.
Next door. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was where I started bar backing, and then the bartender Summer Hayes, she taught me how to bartend. And when I turned 21, I started picking up shifts there. And it's so funny because I remember at the time Tattooed Moms was like, that was like the place, man. Like,
yeah.
It was a cool place. And I remember because we were on the same street, we were both on South Street. you know, people from Moms would come down and like have drinks with us. And we had, you know, we had a little South Street friendship. Mm-hmm. And I remember one of the guys, Joe B, who no longer works at the bar, but he's a wonderful artist. Joe Brukow, if anybody gets to hear this and wants to check him out online, his art is fantastic. He does these like paper cutouts that are just brilliant. But he was working there at the time. And I was like, hey man, how do I get a job at T-Moms? You know? And he's like, oh, there's a 5-year waiting list.
And, really?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was like, oh damn, well, can I get on that waiting list? You know? And then I didn't hear, you know, I didn't think about it for a while. And then, yeah, you know, tough shit's happened. And we all quit our jobs and went on tour and came back. And I started working at this other bar for Hot Men that was kind of popular in Philly called Cantina. And I was kind of getting screwed around the Cantina because the management there was really bad. And I remember like, basically they pulled some nonsense that I'm not going to get into because I let bygones be bygones, but I put my 2 weeks notice in and I remember I was like, I'm going for a drink, you know? And I went to Tattooed Moms and Joe B was there bartending. And I was like, oh man, I just put my 2 weeks in. Like they screwed me up. And I told him the whole story. And he's like, that's crazy. He's like, that's messed up. He goes, you know what? We're looking for a bar back and maybe a fill-in bartender. Like here's Robert's number. Robert's the owner, Perry. And here's Robert's number. Shoot him a text. Tell me, you know, I was like, all right. So I said, you know, I set it up and he's like, yeah, come in for an interview. So I sat down, I told him my deal, whatever. And he's like, great, you're on. Like, we'll train you and see how it goes. And that's been it. And that was 13 years ago.
Oh my God. You've been there that long.
Yeah. It's the longest job I've ever had, but it's a family, you know?
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
They feel like my family like that.
Do you know how long Tattooed Moms has been there?
It's 25
like,
years.
I was gonna say it's like 20 plus, right?
June or July, I think. Yeah.
That's incredible.
It'll be 25 years. I was 97.
It's incredible. And I mean, people know it's like your family, if you go there, but it seems like it, to me, it always struck me as being like, I don't want to call it a dive because it's more than that. You know, I mean, it's not pretentious at all, but it has that art aspect to it. And
totally.
I mean, so much more. Is there live music there too?
No, we actually don't have a permit for live
permit
music.
For that. Yeah. So it's just the art stuff really.
Yeah. Just the art stuff. We do. I mean, they do some performance kind of stuff. Like we have readers come, well, you know, prior to the pandemic, we had a little more events going on. We had like a reader series where they'd bring different authors in, and, you know, read some of their work and, poetry, that kind of thing. We also had these like, burlesque nights where they bring like a whole crew of people and they like play music and dance to it. And
yeah.
That sort of thing. But yeah, we don't really do much in the way of like having like DJs or anything like that. It's really more just like the event that comes, sometimes they'll have music that they want to play. But yeah, I mean, we're there for everybody. We have a lot of art shows too. That's another big one. They'll have like art marts where, you know, you can have like a little booth and have your art set up and people can buy it. It's really cool. It's a really great place that I have never really experienced a bar like it. I've been to a lot of, you know, dive bars, and a lot of these like cool punk centers, and a lot of them are great, and I'm not knocking them, but they are a little one note sometimes. And I really feel like that's one of the things about Moms that's so cool, is it's really multifaceted. Like there's the whole art thing, but then there's like the music thing. And then there's also like it used to be like a place where skateboarders hang out. We're also one of the only bars with like a good pool table. So people come and play pool there. And then and we also have two floors. So one floor is a little more chill. It's not, you know, like the graffiti center that the upstairs is. And it's like more for like, you know, sitting down at a table, having a meal, maybe having some drinks and talking, and it's like cool and more laid back. And then there's the upstairs, which is much more like of a party vibe. And I think it's great because it gives us the opportunity to kind of use these spaces in different ways and bring other people in. It's really one of the most diverse crowds I've ever seen in a bar. And it's also one of the only bars, and this is something that I kind of miss about bars a little bit, where you'll sit down and you can go by yourself and you'll talk to people. Like people will talk to you there. People really feel comfortable enough there that they'll open up to you as a stranger. Because there's this kind of vibe of like, everybody is allowed here, you know? And there's really, I don't see that everywhere. You know, a lot of these other bars that are cool bars or whatever, they're kind of like, you go with your friends and like, maybe if you're out to like meet and greet, you know, you might talk to somebody,
like,
but
yeah, it sounds like it doesn't sound like a pickup scene at all. It's not that kind of thing. And it's not too cool.
I mean, it can be.
It's just a, go and hang.
Yeah.
Well, anywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's very geared towards yeah, the go and hang thing. But you know, that's not to say you can't meet people.
Yeah.
I know people who meet there. I mean, I think we're having a wedding that's happening there because they met there.
Yeah. So, oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you what your favorite thing about working there would be, but it sounds like that's probably a huge part of
That's definitely high up on the list for me. Yeah. Just being able to, you know, the crowd just being like really open. We don't have TVs, which is something that I've always thought was really great about
it. That's awesome.
Yeah, TVs kill a bar scene. They really do, because just everybody's staring at the screen. It could just be like a Kohl's commercial.
Yeah, it really can, you know, and that's something. I have a bar here in Los Angeles, and that's something I didn't want TVs in it, but we're like, we're in LA, we got Dodger people, we got to have it sometimes, you know, like during happy hour, we'll have to have it on, but we often turn it off, or if it's the weekends, we'll have like music videos on there because the same music that's playing through there. But since we've reopened our inside, we've just had them off, you know, a lot of the time, and people haven't noticed. I think maybe because they're so excited to be inside again, you know, to kind of do all that. But no, I get you. And in fact, a friend of mine started like I don't know if it was a Facebook group or something that was bars without TVs, and just where people could just know all around the country if they went somewhere to a bar with TVs. So I'll have to add tattooed moms to that.
Oh yeah. Well, there you go. So
I have a question for you about kind of, since you've been at this place for like, you know, so long, and you came from what was probably a much more high volume kind of thing, like the differences from, you know, bartending at that live music venue essentially, and then coming here where you've got, you know, you guys are making cocktails for people. I'm sure it's still beer in a shot all the time, but you know, what was it like when you were in that live venue to like hustle back there? And
you know, the funny thing is that they're actually not so dissimilar.
Really?
Mostly because Moms is got very popular over the last, I want to say like, see, with the pandemic, it always throws me off because I have to add like 2 years to everything.
Yeah, totally. It's like this period of time that we all kind of skip over. And
that was last year. No, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, I did age during that time.
Yeah.
You know?
But and grew
yeah, in various places that I didn't want to grow in, you know, that was. so you're getting slammed at Tattooed Moms too?
We did. Pre-pandemic. Mm-hmm. Right. It was, I mean, we were on a lot of lists as being like a wonderful place to go, best dive bar, bars you have to go to in Philly, you know, that kind of thing, like South Street attractions. I mean, we're definitely like on a lot of lists, and rightfully so. But because of that, we definitely got very popular. We have very, very popular cocktails. We are a destination spot for vegan menu.
Okay.
Yeah, we have a very, very good and cherished like vegan comfort food menu.
Nice.
Like, you know, fried chicken sandwiches and hot chicken sandwiches and chopped cheese and cheese steaks and burgers, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we have like vegan versions of all those things.
Yeah.
So we're a destination for that reason. Obviously, you know, the art thing too is big. People love to come and just like doodle on the walls, do their tags, repaint.
Be part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They just all want to be part of it. So we were very, very busy for a while. I mean, we were like packed all the time, and we had we had a big staff, and we were just always busy. I mean, like from the moment we opened the door.
Wow.
So during that time, I'm going to say this was probably like in the last like 7 or 8 years, maybe. We just really, really like kind of blew up, and we're doing great for ourselves, which is wonderful. And I hope it continues like that. You know, with all the COVID restrictions, we had to limit ourselves to just to-go food and an outdoor eating space.
Yeah.
You know, relax a little bit with the indoor dining. We didn't jump on it. We wanted to do it right. So we didn't really open up right away like a lot of places did. Then when we did open, we only opened the one bar upstairs, and we're working on, you know, different hours. But one thing I thought was really great is this was like because of the pandemic, obviously we had to like change a lot of things. And Robert, the owner, really, he's always thought that, because the way a lot of bars and restaurants work, for those of you out there who don't know, a lot of us were paid really poorly. We're paid $2.25 an hour, or $3 an hour, you know, just these low wages, and we're all reliant on tips. And those tips, you know, our bar is very up and up. We tax all of our tips, mm-hmm. and stuff, but you know, this was a really great opportunity. And so he wanted to come up with a more equitable pay model. And so we're actually being paid a living wage now. But because of that, you know, there's a lot of balance that has to be done. And so we had to, you know, kind of keep our hours low, make sure that we're making enough money to support both keeping the bar open and paying everybody appropriately. But it's a really honorable thing that he's done. And I really respect it a lot. And so right now we, in fact, this past weekend, we opened the downstairs for the first time in 21 months.
Yay. Amazing.
Yeah. So we're starting off by having that open just on the weekends, mm-hmm. And continuing just the upstairs during the week. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're just going to go with it, and people are going out now again.
Yeah.
But not as much as they used to.
It's same here. I think there's an apprehension that people will, we still have some stuff to get through, you know, and in the meantime, choose your night, go out, enjoy yourself, be careful, come on home. Yeah, that's awesome. Exactly. Awesome. So have you been able to get creative behind the bar? Any of those cocktails, your babies? Or
I've had a couple babies in the past. The ones that are currently on the menu, none of them are mine. Adrian Mowry, he's kind of our head bartender. He came up with a lot of them, and they're very popular and they're great. He makes, his drinks are great. They're really, really great. Funny enough, I'm gonna air out a little something here. TGI Fridays ripped us off.
Shut up. Yeah, seriously?
They have what'd the they pink steal? Punk. The pink punk.
At TGI Fridays, you can get a drink called the pink punk.
You can get the pink punk, and yeah, it is that essentially a Cosmo. Has been stolen. Yeah, it's obviously it's a Cosmo that's poured over a bit of cotton candy. And the cotton candy melts into the glass with the drink, and it's like a whole show. Mm-hmm. And we were doing it. Ours is called the Cosmo Cloud.
Oh, jeez.
Ours was first. And after about 2 or 3 years of doing that, suddenly it was at TGI Fridays. It was called the Pink Punk.
Oh, jeez.
And obviously, we can't really send them a cease and desist because mm-hmm. cocktails aren't really copyrighted mm-hmm. and that sort of mm-hmm. thing. But
we know.
Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, it was invented right here at Tattooed Moms.
Excellent. Oh, sexy girl. Well, what's one you remember being especially proud of? One of yours?
One of mine?
I know it's hard to choose.
I had a cherry limeade that I made that I thought was pretty good. I was pushing pretty hard to get that on our brunch. We had a brunch menu for a while that had like brunch drinks. And I made this little cherry limeade boozy.
What was in it? Because that sounds delicious already. So what spirit did you add in there?
I think it was vodka, and I muddled some limes and some cherry, some fresh lime juice, some sugar,
pretty simple and refreshing.
Shake and strain over ice.
Right.
Lime and cherry garnish, something to that effect.
Something simple.
I'd have to look it up.
That sounds like a perfect picnic drink though, or brunch. Yeah, that sounds perfect for that. Especially out there, you guys get all humid and gross all summer long. So
yeah, tell me about it.
So, when you're home, you know, when you're not working, are you just sipping on a beer? And what are you listening to?
Oh man, I listen to everything. I'm a music nut. you know, it's funny over the pandemic. So during the pandemic, I was in this little 800 square foot apartment in Center City, which, you know, was wonderful pre-pandemic because you could walk everywhere. I could walk to both my jobs. I could go to bars. I didn't have to take an Uber anywhere. I could just walk because I was in the heart of it. Once the pandemic hit, I shared that office with my wife, who is a therapist.
Oh, and so yeah.
Not the same. Small space. And so I had to be absolutely silent and have headphones on with music playing very loud so that I couldn't hear any of, you know, these confidential conversations, which I was always very respectful about. We, you know, were very, very careful about HEPA laws and that sort of thing. But so, so I constantly had headphones on, which means that like I've listened to all of Spotify. I'm working my way through Bandcamp now.
Oh God. So your Spotify Wrapped must have just been like all over the place. It's like your top five are like, you know, Icelandic pop and, you know, whatever.
I hate to admit it. I do use the hell out of Spotify. I hate that how poorly they pay artists, and I think it's terrible. And anyone out here listening, please buy your friend's music, go on to Bandcamp and pay them. They don't do it for free.
This is a good time to plug your music because you have music on Bandcamp.
I do. I have the Whips have all their records on there.
And what was your role in the Whips?
I would plug the Tough Shits, but I don't actually get any. I don't see any.
You don't get anything from that. So, let's talk about the Whips because we didn't really talk about them that much.
So the Whips, the Tough Shits went through some lineup changes. Particularly, we had a bass player move to Florida and then out to LA. During that time, that's okay. He came back.
Oh, okay. A lot of people do.
I lost my train of thought. He moved out there, and because of that, we had a lot of downtime. And I kind of started this band with my friends Joe and Gray, and we were a three-piece to start, and then we wanted to fill the sound out a little bit. And we got a guitar player, Kyle Seeley, who's in the band Sheer Mag. Mm-hmm. He was our
love
other guitar
that band.
Player. Yeah, they're great. They're wonderful people too. Matt and Tina, Kyle, I've known those guys for a long time. They're all really wonderful and they do great stuff. Matt's new band's really great. And everything Kyle does is awesome. Tina was in a band called The Shakes that were really great for a while. So I've known them all for a long time. They're really great people. In fact, they opened up for us on out at Whip Show. Their first show was opening for the Whips.
That's amazing.
Funny enough. And then now they're massive.
Massive, yeah.
Well, what happened was their demo got all this hype. And rightfully so, Pitchfork picked it up and Broken Clock can be right twice a day, right?
But Whips, you guys were doing your thing.
So we were doing our thing. And
you were like the front person on this, right?
So I'm the singing drummer.
Singing drummer.
There
aren't too many of those. I mean,
no,
how many?
There's really not.
It's like Don Henley, Phil Collins, dude from Night Ranger.
right. And
The Knack. Yes, that's right. Yeah. There's a couple out there. But you were doing it, singing and drumming. That is hard.
Yes.
I can't imagine.
Kind of my little party trick.
It is a party trick because that makes me like my heart is racing just thinking about doing that. Like, how do you have the breath to get the words out and everything, you know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was in Tough Shits for so long and played so much with them that I'm kind of like doing the rock and roll beat, you know.
Yeah. You're not even thinking.
No. Yeah, I can do that in my sleep. So I kind of got used to that style of drumming enough that I can kind of like do the singing thing too. I will say it is a little harder to remember lyrics playing drums than it is just singing. I tend to like, it's easier for me if I'm just singing, I can remember them easy, but if I'm playing drums, sometimes I like can't get the words in my head fast enough. So we were doing the Whips and Kyle was in the band, and then the Sheer Mag thing took off and we were like, go do it.
Yeah.
You know, you only get these opportunities once in a lifetime, do it, you know? And then Gray, who was our bass player at the time, he switched over to guitar, and Rusty Langley became our bass player. And that was kind of what we stuck with for the rest of the band. And it was great. Joe Cousy, he does a lot of solo work. You might find him on there too. He and I were songwriting partners throughout. I think it just came time. He had a child and he was kind of like, I don't really have time for the rock and roll thing as much. And I was getting married, so I was like busy with that.
And now we have you making music in your room.
Yeah.
There's beautiful stuff that comes out of people's closets and bedrooms. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And so you were asking what I've been listening to. I'll tell you what, MTS Radio, I don't know if you're familiar at all. They are a radio it's live radio. They have two stations. I believe one is based in New York and one's in England. They have like two like studios that, or maybe it's LA and I can't remember.
Either but it's way, NTS.
It's NTS.live. Okay. And they are great. They have the, they have these like regular DJs who are awesome. I mean, they all play stuff I've just like never even heard of. And like once in a while I hear something, like, oh, I know this, you know,
but they're like, I've arrived. I know a song they're playing.
Right. Right. Like, ooh, maybe I am
cool.
Guy.
Oh no.
Yeah. But yeah, and it's such a mixed bag, which is so cool for someone like me. I mean, yeah. You'll hear, there'll be like an hour of just like, you know, UK garage, mm-hmm. you know, like bass music. Mm-hmm. And then like then suddenly it'll be like an opera show. And then you'll switch over to NTS2 and over there, they're playing all like, you know, deep cut country and rockabilly stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and then after that hour, then it's like they're playing, I don't know, literally whatever, you know. It's like literally yeah. all styles of music are
represented.
Some shows are even like the whole show is a mixed bag, like you know, it's really cool. And yeah. there are some really, really interesting DJs on there, and I have discovered so much music from it, man. Like so much. It's just yeah. been, it's just opened my eyes to, especially because I've been like I said, I've been kind of learning about, you know, digital production and just hearing these like electronic music pieces and just like wondering how they did that, or like thinking about like, how could I do something like that? You know, mm-hmm. it's been really inspiring.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of where I've been as with this whole solo venture. It's really been, my whole ethos has been to not have any rules. Mm-hmm. No, I'm not barring any instruments, and no, not barring any styles of music.
Awesome.
It's really just been a place for me to explore.
It's freeing. It's very freeing to yeah. let all that go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it feels good. And so like, I've just been experimenting a lot with like MIDI and kind of like all the things that you can do with MIDI. And, mm-hmm. You know, I don't have a lot of these instruments, but I might have like find samples online or find mm-hmm. these like synths, you know, yeah. that I can play with. There's a lot of really great free VSTs out there. And so I'm just kind of just experimenting with all of it. And I have a lot of material, but I'm not really sure what to do with all of it yet.
No, you'll get there. There's plenty of yeah. time still. You still got yeah. that office. So
I was kind of hoping, like when we first started talking about doing this, I was like, oh, this will be a great chance. Maybe I can get something out and I can plug it. But I'm going to be honest with you. Nope. It's not ready yet. I have a Bandcamp page and an Instagram, both of which have nothing on them other than you can follow me. James Daniel Horn, I was gonna say
pimp all your stuff out, so
yeah, jamesdanielhorn.bandcamp and mm-hmm. @jamesdanielhorn is my Instagram. As soon as I'm ready to release some stuff, it'll be there. But yeah, I'm just not sure what I want to do with it yet, because it's such a mixed bag. Mm-hmm. I have what I think is the skeleton of an actual album, and mm-hmm. I think you know, that's like, I know that that's going to happen eventually. I'm kind of just like tweaking all the lyrics that I have and going over mixes and that kind of thing, but none of it's like really ready to share yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, in the meantime, while we wait anxiously for you to release some solo material, what would you recommend? Give a pairing for people. Like, what should they have a drink of? Since this is music and booze, let's put it together and then we can wrap it up. Like, what should they have a drink of and what should they be listening to? You know, maybe at the same time. This could be something that you find yourself doing, you know, are you sitting there having a beer and listening to what, like classic punk album or something, or what is it?
Okay.
Good at,
so you know? This is a little thing that I like to do.
Yeah.
At the end of a shift, especially a hard shift, you know, we have to cut the music when it's closed.
Mm-hmm.
And then when everybody gets out of the bar, one of my favorite things to do was to just pour myself a whiskey on the rocks, and I would put on Hank Williams. And just listen to like, you know,
any of it.
I like Hank Williams.
Very appropriate.
I also, Ricky Nelson is another good one.
Ricky Nelson. Really?
Yeah. Ricky Nelson, like old Ricky Nelson records. And Everly Brothers is another one.
Nice.
There's just like old, you know,
that's going to help you wind down.
Yeah. Yeah. I do those. Those are the three go-tos for me.
Nice. But, I like it.
Yeah, but they're just like this old country crooners, just like melodies and harmonies, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Sometimes it's just what I need. Or also like old doo-wop records, stuff like that. I like to put just like, it's just super. It's just
I get it. That would be nice. Yeah, no, I totally get it. Cause you can kind of like sing your way out. you know, when you're done, you kind of chill seeing your way out. Well, that's a great place to wrap it. So don't go away, but thank you so much for taking the time. I cannot wait to get back out to Philadelphia. I told you I have family out there.
So, Yeah.
And some friends.
Please let me know when
you're here. Oh, absolutely. I mean, one friend of mine is an artist and a skater, so I'm sure he's lived there and never mentioned it to me nor taken me there. And I'll be very upset with him. I'm like, Adam, this is where we're going when I come to town.
We're
going there. Yes. So thank you so much.
No, thank you. Honestly, this has been an honor to be able to talk about music and booze and, you know, just in general, just promote Tattooed Moms, because it really, truly is a wonderful place.
It seems like a very special place.
I think it's the best bar in the city, is, you know.
Well, of course.
Possibly in the country.
Of course it is.
Street, and my heart fell at your feet. I can't help it if I'm still in love with you. Somebody.
Well, you heard the man. Go to Philadelphia and go visit Tattooed Mom. Have a drink, have some tasty vegan snacks, because you know they do it well, and say hi to James, because probably he'll be there since he's been there for 13 years. It sounds like a really fun place. I have yet to go. I can't wait to go. I have family in Philadelphia, and it'll be lovely when I can hop on a plane and go see them and drag them out to this place. Yeah, I think that's pretty much it, except that, special surprise for you, we're going to play you The Whips. That was James' most recent band, and this song is called I Wanna Love You All the Time. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thank you for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guest, or if you want to connect with me, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. While you're there, give the show a rating and a review. It really helps to get the word out. If you want to hear the playlists our guests have curated, search She Be Mo on Spotify, SHEBMO.
Find pictures of the interviewees and the cool stuff they create on the Music and Booze with Mo Instagram account. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers.